Blythe shrug. They never said. Suppressing an exasperated retort, Bridget Bond explained. The bushers never passed to Sapphire Point, so they must have gone toward either Jehovah or Forganger. If you've no idea their homeworld, at least tell me which direction they went. The director waved her hand. Oh, you surely can't suspect Forganger or Jehovah. Hijacking pirates isn't Forganger's style, and Jehovah's a turtle, keeps its head tucked in. Of course not, the Hound explained patiently. But the Phantom Fleet must have passed through one of them, and their STC could tell me where they went next. Now, I could be tossing a kind to pick one, but I'd lose a fart night running down and back, should I be guessing wrong. Those are 12 of the busiest interchanges in this region of the Spiral Arm, and that's a lot of straw to sift for one flotilla of needles. Unless, she added sarcastically, the ambushers fight a battle at each interchange to draw attention to themselves. The director laughed. Oh, of course, how silly of me. But we don't know which ramp they came off. They must have entered under heavy traffic, hiding themselves in a forest of arrivals, no beacons sent ahead. Incoming supposed to hail the port. Can't always see them at high V, you know. Pulaweia had reverted to choppy sentences, by which Bridget Bond deduced that her paraperception was imperfect. When the director split her attention and sub-vocalized, she could not frame complex sentences. Then which road are they after leaving on? The Hound asked with growing exasperation. Don't know, swung around. Pulaweia held a hand up and said, wait a sec, and stopped the alternate conversation with a curt, handle it yourself, dear. Then they swung around, grabbing space like that ancient god, Tarzan. The ether strings are still rippling out that way. We thought they meant to circle around to the Silk Road entrance, but they never showed. All that confusion. You know how many ships were in the sky at the time? And stealth the way the ambushers were. Well, she shrugged, we lost them. You lost them, Bridget Bond repeated. She could well believe in Cocker's sloppiness, but this beggared the imagination. The director was, as the Terrans were wont to say, blowing smoke. Bridget Bond had listened to evasions spun by the best of them and recognized all the symptoms. I see. Is that a common problem around the junction? The director muttered, no, I'm offline. Then, what do you mean? Losing track of the traffic out in the Coopers, does that happen often? The elf's face hardened as much as elf faces could. We do well enough. You noticed the battle itself, I'm sure. You must have gotten some positional fixes. I can extrapolate origin and destination from those. They changed vectors 3 times while we did track them and might have done anything while they were in the black, so I don't think the fixes we did get can help you. Bridget Bond spoke as if to a child. I'll be judging what I can and cannot do. I need to review your transit records. She was already proffering a memo stick when the director shook her head. Oh dear, I'm afraid that won't be possible. This was more than evasion. This was obstruction. But the why of it eluded the Hound. Was Peacock protecting the Phantom Fleet? She began to suspect that if she did not obtain the STC records soon, she never would, or at least not the original records. The director was, as the Terrans said, playing for time. She flashed her badge once more. I'm afraid you've no choice. League regulations. I demand and require your information in the name of Tully O'Connor, Ardrey of High Terra, and the president of the League of the Periphery. Maybe the formal language would kickstart the woman. But the director smiled sweetly. And I'm afraid your High King doesn't mass much here. Peacock's not a member state. Bridget Bond reared back. Nah, member? Ridiculous. But her implant shook hands with the library aboard her ship and confirmed the fact. No agreement was on record. Was her gazetteer deficient? The Treaty of Amity and Common Purpose was submitted 150 metric years ago. The Shannon is still debating it. We don't rush into things here. Oh, she waved a hand. It's our custom to cooperate with the League, but we don't cooperate because we're ordered. We do it because we're nicely asked. Bridget Bond swallowed a sarcastic observation and forced a please through smiling teeth. Pulaweo ran a finger along the back of the hound's hand. I said, nicely asked. Bridget Bond finally understood what the director wanted in exchange for cooperation. She was no stranger to bribery, even sexual bribery, but casual sex could still shock her. When she used sex, there was nothing casual about it. It was purposeful, deliberate, and well-planned. The director misread the pause. Are you exclusive to men, she asked, because I'm seeing my surgeon later today. I've been feeling very male lately. Bridget Bond greeted this announcement with astonished silence. She could not imagine this elf containing a single manly impulse. One surge of testosterone and the vessel would shatter. For that matter, anything genuinely feminine whistled through her as through an empty reed. Those who try to do two things at once, she decided, would seldom do either very well. Foreganger or Jehovah? She could simply guess, but Jehovah was 10 days' journey and Foreganger closer to 20. Better an extra day on Peacock to make certain, even if that meant snuggling with Pulaweo. Yet what guarantee did she have that, even after the bribe, Pulaweo would cooperate? She could imagine an entire series of such delays, always imminently cooperative, never overtly a refusal, until finally a well-doctored set of records would be handed over with great fanfare, cooperative exclamations, and calculated deception. She wondered if they thought they could doctor the records well enough to deceive a hound. There were rumors that captains carrying illicit cargoes could launder their transit through Peacock Junction and could drop off radar screens when the need arose. A hound's matter, if true, though not to her present purpose, but Peacock might well fear otherwise. And so the hound found herself at liberty until evening. The day was one of brilliant clarity. Polychromopolis, the planetary capital, lay in the monsoon belt, and the dry season had just begun. The temperature was hot, or at or above body temperature, and fans and parasols were common along the streets. Above, in a cloudless sky, a few high white streamers marked the tracks of jetliners and ballistic leapers heading for the antipodes. Below, the recently ended rains had painted the landscape in moist pastels. Flowers of brilliant yellow and orange and red lined the pedestrian walkways beneath the shade of broad leafy trees. Some of the blossoms would have been known on old Earth, assuming the origin myths were really true. But others are artifacts unknown to nature, exotic races of palm and orchid and rose and deodar, bearing those ancient names only through courtesy and the contribution of a few ancestral genes. Passing her on the Embarcadero, the slidewalk from the port into the main shopping district, were folk from all over the spiral arm. She saw pale, squat Jugurthans with their startling wide and outturned noses, Chetanids in tartan kilts and turbans. There were sour-faced, girdled Jehovans muttering over their prayer beads, and gaudy trade captains from the greater hunts, whose jewels and rings and robes glittered in the late morning sunlight. She heard the hooting accents of alabaster, the flat twang of megrinome, and the nearly incomprehensible jibber-jabber of Terran peck peddlers. Peacock wasn't a great interchange like Jehovah, but many travelers stopped here for pleasure and relaxation. It was the preferred vacation spot for this region of the arm. She noticed how heads turned and eyes flickered in her direction. A hound? Here? Why? It was the uniform, of course. The concept of a uniform was alien to Conkers, perhaps a little perverted. Pulaweo had asked her to wear the uniform tonight. She stepped onto the esplanade, a lateral slidewalk traversing the main portside shopping district known as Raja Dharava. She had no eye for the clothing stores. The rift would fill with stars before she would prance about in the topless throng that the elves of Peacock favored, and judging by a pair of Jugurthan women passing nearby, a few sagging tourists might have profited by adopting the same approach. But a tea shop at the corner of Kirtnestrad caught her eye, and she entered on a whim to seek refuge from the heat. Inside, she encountered a medley of odors, a hint of vanilla, a suggestion of roses,